Welcome to Brand Disciples. We're calling a generation of entrepreneurs to be on mission as we equip the church to disciple them. I'm David Mills, and I'm wired to touch the world like Jesus by helping people connect to his mission and take new steps toward him. I love to live on the margin between the church and the marketplace, and I'm joined by Amy Alexander.
Hey there. I love seeing people inside and outside of the church walls empowered to be on mission every single day. I'm gifted to display Jesus to the world as I teach what's true and shepherd people in their journey. Thanks for joining.
And as we talk today, we were in this series about the hidden business codes in the New Testament, and we've identified that these business codes are hidden in the household codes in the New Testament, which are actually in multiple books, and they are there because there really was no corporate business structure until the end of the Roman era around 500 AD. These household instructions would have been direct teaching to the businesses that these households operated. And we believe that businesses are economic households, and as members of God's family, that's how we should run our business. We've talked about how we need to see our businesses this way as an economic household, and we've learned some important lessons so far in our conversation. God's created us with a family design, and that's also what makes for amazing businesses. We've also talked about the fact that his way, his method, is to change the heart of people, and from that, to transform relationships, and ultimately, to transform the society, not the other way around. We've also talked about how these codes are counterculture, and one of the ways they're so counterculture is that they lend dignity to groups of people that have been, throughout history, treated as a lower class. Every one of the household codes and all the different sections of the New Testament starts with a discussion of the culture of the business that you want to develop as a Christ-following leader. And then it presents four circles of relationships that are present in every business. These four circles are outsiders, powerless workers, sons and daughters, and partners. And we're actually on number two today, which is sons and daughters. But all of these, as you can see, tie back to the relationships that we have in our lives. So one of the vital circles in our family and our business are the sons and daughters in our life. And of course, these are people that we are raising up, right? And so you think about your family, it's obvious who your sons and daughters are. And sometimes we adopt some, right? And of course, all of us are adopted into the family of God. So we're all adopted. We're all on the same level footing. But there are people in our business that we're also raising up. And they're not just transient people that are going to come through and leave, but they're people that really connect to us, and they have potential to carry the heritage and legacy of our values and our faith in the business. And so we're in the process in almost every business of raising up some people who are going to maybe eventually take the reins from us. And that's not just true in a family business, but it's true in any business that wants to last longer than one generation, right? So we should stop for a minute and think about the people in our businesses who fit into this circle of relationships, sons and daughters. Who comes to your mind, Amy?
Yeah, I mean, other than my actual children, I do think it's really important to take this as broadly as possible. Really consider, I'm entering a stage, I'm in my mid-30s, which for most of you listening is like still so very young, but I've aged out of that young married couple, that young part of my life, and I'm starting to age into a tiny bit more wisdom, a little bit more. Like, I have people coming into my life that are in their early 20s and they're newly married, and so I've got 10 or 15 years on them. And this is something I've actually spent quite a bit of time thinking about. What kind of legacy am I leaving? What do I have to offer? Who can I take under my wing that I couldn't really before because I wasn't really wise enough to even think about doing that? And I think one part of this discussion has to be, how are you bringing people in knowing it might just be a first season?
Yeah.
So being okay with spending a lot of effort investing in someone who's only going to be with your company for a year because you know that they are smart and talented and they have lots of things ahead of them, and it may or may not be inside your company. And so being totally okay with, you are my son or daughter for this season, and that's okay. But I don't know.
Yeah. So I do think we have to, as you said, think broadly. So what if you're a solopreneur? What if you're like, we happen to be in a family business, but a lot of people are not, right? So who falls in this category? And so I think that we have to go along these relationship lines and ask ourselves and ask God to show us who's in my life that I'm supposed to be raising up. Now, it doesn't have to only be in business. And this comes back to this whole idea of like discipleship. That's what Brand Disciples is actually about, right? Making your business a place where people can grow up in their faith and in their whole life. And so you can adopt people as in this role, regardless of what the focus is. It can be business related. It can be for their family needs or helping them become a better parent. It can be on any area. And it could also be in their faith, right? So I think you have to ask yourself who these people are. I think there are people that you are raising up, certainly into the industry. And so a lot of people will come through. And we've had a lot of people that we have helped to give them a start in the industry. We invested in them. And I love your heart about this, Amy, to say, hey, we don't control how long they'll be with us. And these are not necessarily permanent relationships. In fact, in our culture, that would be pretty rare for it to actually be a really long-term relationship. But there will be some that may actually end up taking over the business from you, right? And that's the ultimate legacy for many businesses. But and often those are not your biological children. There are people that come into this economic family of yours and they get raised up. But they are learning from you. And what you're doing with them is actually really influential, because even if they are only with you for a year and they go off into the industry, they're going to take what they learned from you and they're going to spread that around and they're going to create influence wherever they go. So this is a big opportunity.
I think that it's one of those things you do. Now, you say all this, you say this all the time, Dave. Discipleship is a two-way street. So even if you're discipling someone who is many years your junior, you're still going to learn things from them as long as your heart posture is in a good place. However, I do think it's the kind of thing you go into with a sacrificial mentality. You go in knowing, like I said, they may be with me for 10 years or for 10 weeks or for 10 months. And either way, I'm going to invest here. But there is also, to some degree, there's like the discernment in the choice of who is that going to be? We don't want to be poor stewards of our time and our wisdom by trying desperately to invest in someone who is extremely disinterested in the process. So I think that plays into this. Who is going to take this? Who's going to value the time that we spend? Who's not? We're always discipling everybody, but maybe I won't spend as much time or intention on this person who's just really not ready for that process. I don't know.
Yeah, so I appreciate what you're raising here. There's a passage in 2 Timothy where Paul's teaching Timothy about how to do this. And he says, what you've heard from me in the presence of many witnesses, commit to faithful men who will be able to teach others also. So there is this characteristic that we're looking for. That's 2 Timothy 2:2, by the way, if you want to look it up. But we're looking for this characteristic of faithfulness, which is the ability to take information and learn and be engaged and maybe make personal changes or grow. It's a kind of along the lines of teachableness. I think but it is a person that you're going to invest in. So I do think we have to be wise about where we make these investments.
It's sacrificial, don't you think?
Very sacrificial.
The process is sacrificial.
It is. It's the same thing with your natural children. Certainly you get something back from that. You get joy. Maybe you'll get grandkids, right? It's also true in the economic household that you're going to give and give, and they're going to grow and benefit from whatever you can give them. And they're going to give feedback to you and help you grow as well, challenge you probably, which is awesome. It's really good. And I think we need a model for people that, like, we're never done growing. And that should be part of the deal, right? So we're modeling humility. We're not modeling, I'm the great mentor from planet Zod and you should fall down at my feet. We're not talking about that. We're really talking about this two-way street for sure. Amy, what do you think, like, what's a healthy relationship look like when we are helping to cultivate and raise somebody up in this son-daughter role who we know is probably going to go on to influence the industry? They're certainly going to influence their own family and the people in their circle. So, like, we're investing in them. So what does it look like for that to be a healthy relationship?
I'm glad we're talking about this because I do think that both approaches to this conversation are important. There's the really important approach of, these are not my biological children, but they are still sons and daughters I'm raising up. But then there is this part where I do think a lot of entrepreneurs and solopreneurs end up at some point working with family or maybe having their children come in and it becomes generational. And we said in one of our very early episodes of this series that we have all experienced really unhealthy family businesses. And we have done our fair share of being a really unhealthy family business. We spent many years in the quote unquote youth of our work together, not knowing how to communicate with each other, doing a lot of arguing in front of team members. There was a lot of toxicity in the way that we ran our business for a long time until the Lord came in and said, you need to be vulnerable and you guys need to learn and grow. And now we work so well together. But that's a very normal story. And there's lots of businesses that maybe never get to a place of health that are family businesses. But one time we did a round table with someone who is in charge of a very large company. It was a company that his father had started. And he told this story that really struck me. It was a story I wish I had heard many years prior, because it would have changed some of the way that I behaved. But he talked about coming in to his father's company and he wanted to do whatever he wanted to do and he thought he was right. And he got frustrated and he left and he spent years doing something else. And then he came back and the Lord really said to him, you need to give your father his fair honor. Your father is in charge and he knows what he's doing and you need to respect that and honor that. So he actually came back into the company and said, Dad, I'm so sorry for the way that I behaved. I'm so sorry that I didn't give you the respect you deserved. This is your company. I'm here to serve that vision. Please tell me how I can serve the vision that you have. And that takes like maturity and humility that I certainly didn't have in the youth of our business, that I really wish I had. I wish I had had. And so I think that from a daughter's perspective, it's really important to come into it not as a teenager, quote unquote, in your brain, right? Teenagers are like, they think everyone's stupid but them, and especially their parents. But when you're working with your parents, as long as you're not literally a teenager, you can't have the mind of a teenager. You can't come in thinking, I know a bunch and you don't, and I'm smart. You have to come into it with full humility, recognizing that this is not your company. Maybe it will be one day, but it's not. And you just have to have humility that's maybe beyond your years. So that's a lesson I learned far too slowly, but it's a great story. And I do think that is the posture that is asked, or that's the biblical posture a son or daughter should take in a family business.
Well, that's good. And I think that there's like a companion posture to that, and that is the person who's in this parenting role. And by the way, the biblical, we should read the passage in Ephesians 6, 1-4, but which is part of the household codes, which create this basis for our business code. But it was for fathers, but it was in our culture that would apply to mothers. It's really whoever's in that parent role. But there's a companion piece. Let me read this passage and talk about the other side of that coin, Amy, that you just shared. So it says, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise, so that it may go well with you and you may enjoy a long life on the earth. And then verse 4, fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord. So the father side of this is, hey, and kids know this, whether they're economic family kids or biological kids, parents are not perfect by any stretch. And sometimes parents need to be reminded, although I think parents carry a lot of guilt around, fathers, don't exasperate your children. So it's easy for the person in the parent role to do things that are exasperating and frustrating. And so that's the other side of this, is there has to be this two-way street. It has to be this mutual respect in order for this to work. But I think without both things happening, it doesn't really work that well.
Yeah. It's hard. I think that actually operating in true humility, especially for blood family, is hard sometimes. It's a hard thing to learn how to do. How do you as a parent operate in humility with a child that's now an adult who probably does have something valuable to bring, but, you know, you raised them. So coming into humility to that conversation. And then the same way for a son or daughter, when you're not a blood son or daughter, it's this honor culture, this humility culture is much easier, I think, because it's just, you don't know the person that well. You didn't grow up with them. You just don't know all the mistakes they've made. So it's easier to stay humble and all of that stuff. But
yeah,
I think that conversation becomes much more, I don't know, important. It like pinpoints a problem that probably most blood-related family businesses encounter that maybe others don't.
Yeah. And I do think it just points me back to this Ephesians 6:2 verses actually quoting the Ten Commandments, honor your father and your mother. And so there's this family nature of God. God has designed this into us, right? So that's why when we think about these business codes, they speak to this idea of family and they take us into these dynamics. And so it's easy for people who've had, maybe they've really messed up as a father or mother, or maybe they've really been rebellious as a son or daughter, right? But you know what? There's redemption and there's forgiveness. And so we have to walk in that and we have to live it and enjoy it. And it's real. It's not something that's just pretend, but it's real. And there is this growth that we go through. God helps us to change. And that's part of the redemptive process. I do want to have a little fun here. There's lots of controversy around this topic out in the marketing in the world. And so I found actually a thing that Simon Sinek said. And here's what he said. He said on Facebook back in 2018. He said, by the way, Simon Sinek is the one who did this whole thing about start with why. He's got tons of followers, right? So if you don't know who he is, that's what he's about. But here's his quote. Every single employee is someone's son or someone's daughter. Like a parent, a leader of a company is responsible for their precious lives. And so the comments to this are just really interesting, right? Someone says, beautiful. We learn to extend this beyond our own families. Remember, a person is a child of someone. And then someone says, fundamentally, yes. But Mr. Sinek's comments don't always take into account the employee that simply doesn't want to participate, do a good job, and follow the rules. And then someone is in here complaining about how they're being treated in an agile environment, and they're being asked to work on 15 different tasks at a time. And they're asking, is my life precious? So it's raising all kinds of really interesting ideas here. Someone else says, that's a bit much. They're responsible for a healthy work environment. Their parents were responsible for their precious lives. And now as adults, they are, right? So there is this kind of, reaction to people who are going to be overly parental kind of in the workspace. So I do think that what we're really talking about here is a redemptive perspective, that God is talking to people who have the capacity to have their parenting and their son and daughtering shaped by the Holy Spirit, and there'll be people in your life that they will put up walls and don't want this relationship, which is fine. There'll be other people that are not really faithful and you don't want to invest a lot in them. And there'll be other people who've actually never had someone function in their life in this way, and it'll be very healing for them, even though you might not even get to the spiritual conversation until later. But I do think this is important. And also in Forbes, there's a whole article saying, stop saying your company is like a family. Right. So there's a lot of pushback around this idea, right? I do think the pushback comes from this idea, once again, of the kind of sacred secular divide, that the spiritual and the work are separate, the family and the business are separate. And this whole passage, these household codes really speak into that and say, hey, God is a family God. He has designed the family ethic and values and reality into people. And so when they work in a group together, they're going to have these family dynamics.
Yeah, those are so interesting. I think the Forbes article probably comes from just the reality that when you say you're like a family, it's become very trite and it really doesn't mean anything to people. But it's interesting that Simon Sinek thing had me thinking about, we've employed many college students or done internships with high school students. I disciple young people whose parents I know very well. And when you have someone in your company or on maybe a team, like a church team or something, that you're in charge of, and their parents, sometimes when you're about to say something or do something, you think, how would I feel about doing this or saying this if this person's parents were in the room? and it changes what you might feel like doing. I have had that thought many times. Would I be okay with the way that I'm about to approach this conversation? Will I be okay with the way that this person's going to go tell their parents that I approached this situation? And I'm not just talking about people whose parents I know very well. I'm talking about people whose parents I've never met, but they're young. And so it's, you're like hyper aware of this sort of nurturing, caring role you have in the situation. And it does change. I think it changes the way that it's like the compassion, the eyes that you see. It does go to exactly to what Simon Sinek is saying. So you have someone's baby girl or baby boy in your hands and you're ready to either wound them or mold them. And it doesn't mean that you don't allow for consequences where required, or it doesn't mean you're just always soft and fluffy and gracious about everything. No. Depending on the state of that person, you have to approach it in such a way that you would really as a parent.
I think we're really talking about what makes this a healthy relationship. And so it's not primarily a control relationship in which it's not like our 8-year-old that we're telling them they have to eat their peas or they have to make their bed or whatever, pick up their clothes. It's not like that. But we do, in the business space, we do set policies, goals, and standards. And the same thing's true in our home. Like, we have rules, and sometimes the rules are the bad guy. We don't have to be the bad guy. It's the policy, right? This is, you have 10 sick days this year. When you run out of sick days, then you have to go on unpaid time off. That's just the policy. So I do think we're not talking about a control relationship. We're also not talking about abandoning the realities of business, but we are talking about the idea that there is this nurturing role. And I do think from the parenting side of this, like, there's a tremendous responsibility here for us to see that the culture that we are in, the example we're setting, is right, and that we are teaching something that's worthy of being modeled. Paul said, follow me as I follow Christ. So that's a big responsibility. I do think a couple things, like in any healthy family relationship, there has to be a couple of things. One of them is respect. And regardless of the role that you're in with the person, like, you should respect their ability to be self-driving, self-starting. You should respect their self-regulation, like, they're in charge of themselves. You should respect the fact that may have feedback for you. It doesn't take away the fact that they have to do their job. But the other side of it is that there is an affection. There is this affection beyond their current performance. You see their future, you see their potential, and you believe in it. So I think those two things go together as a part of this healthy relationship.
For sure. Really, I think what this gets after is that as someone who either is in charge of people in your company or whatever, wherever you're taking this lesson, you have the opportunity to care more about character development than anything else. And when you develop the character of somebody, it changes really everything. Like, when you choose, I'm pretty sure I've told this story in this series. So if I'm repeating myself, I'm sorry, but it's a perfect example. Talking to a guy that has a big team of salespeople, has a really young, talented salesperson, gets the best numbers, but they have a very missional organization. So they don't get paid as well as maybe other sales teams do. And so this particular person wanted to leave for a better pay. And so he let him leave, of course. It's his choice. Left, had a terrible culture, asked if he can come back. He said, yes, you can come back. This repeated multiple times. And what he told me is that every time that happened, he knew he was building his character because he didn't really want this amazing sales team member if that team member didn't have the proper character. And so he would just do whatever he needed to do to make sure that he had great character. And if that meant one day he left and never came back, so be it. But maybe every time he came back, he'd be his heart posture and he would be better formed in his heart to be the kind of salesperson that he actually wanted on his team. And that is like such a great example of he didn't do whatever he needed to keep the guy. He created consequences and allowed him to take these actions, but also had the grace and the mercy to allow him back on the team every time he came back asking, right? So that's like a very biblical way of approaching this. It had both the boundary and the grace required to make good decisions as an owner. But I don't think most company owners would just let the guy come back over and over. that's a risky thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a redemptive approach to thinking about how is this person going to develop. And we've talked in this series as well about the difference between competency and character, right? And so we do want people to build competence and character, because if they don't build character, then they're pretty much useless, right? Because their great work is going to be undermined by their horrible character, and no one will want to work with them. Clients won't like them. So we do have to help people grow up. And I think this role of parent in the economic family is really important. Paul talked about it in 1 Corinthians 4:15, and he said it this way. He said, "For though you have countless guides in Christ, you do not have many fathers. For I became your father in Christ Jesus through the gospel." So there is this role that's really important, but I do think that we have to talk about, like, where does faith come into this? And so we can be nurturing people into the industry, into the skills, into their competence. We can even work on their character. But at some point, without treating them like a child, because no one wants to be that, we do have to help them to have opportunity to have this growth in their faith. And I think that's important as we think about how this actually works.
Yeah, I was thinking earlier, part of the sacrifice in this relationship is vulnerability. It's not always comfortable or fun to be vulnerable with people that you're supposed to somehow be in charge of / have them respect you. But there's so much gained by vulnerability, especially appropriate vulnerability, in these conversations, and that is a sacrifice. But through vulnerability in that relationship, I think the faith conversation becomes much easier and much more real. But if you're not vulnerable, I'm not really sure how you would ever get to a faith conversation with someone who's not, doesn't know Jesus yet. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I think people will listen to you when you begin to listen to them, when you begin to share with them what's real in your life and the journeys that you've been through to get where you are today, the challenges you've had. And that's how they can't really connect to you or relate to you if you don't do that. I'm not suggesting that we should create all kinds of super formal mentoring relationships in our business. I'm sure there's a place for that, but I think this idea of an economic family says there's going to be people who actually get to know your story and you're willing to share your story with them. And it doesn't mean that all of a sudden you abdicate leadership or you give up on policies and procedures and what works in the business, but it does mean that you are willing to help people to grow in ways that might surprise them, that someone would actually be willing to do that. And I would say that a lot of folks have not ever had this experience. They've never had somebody actually invest in them because they cared about them. And of course, if you're a Christ follower, you have this other motivation, which is you care about them spiritually. You care about their soul. You care about their spiritual condition. You care about their family. I was thinking about Utibe Bassi, who has created this thing called Love as a KPI. And you can look that up online. It's loveasakpi.com.
We'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah, we'll put it in the show notes. So I think that one of the realities here is that if you think about this from the side of the person being cultivated and grown up and nurtured into your business, would they have experienced a positive thing? Would they have experienced love? And of course, love is not only gushy and give me a hug stuff. It's really about investing in people. That passage you read in Ephesians verse 4, it says, "Fathers, don't exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord." We have to think about how do we avoid frustrating people, right? How do we actually be practical about that? And then secondly, we have to provide them with training and instruction, but the biblical idea here is very holistic. When it says training, it's talking about like holistic training and instruction that will increase their character. And when it says instruction, it's talking about helping them to learn to think better, to be more critical thinkers, to have more godly reasoning. So this is not just like surface stuff. This is actually helping cultivate people into being better humans and becoming more what they were designed to be. And part of that they learned from you, because people like catch more than you can teach them. And they're gonna see what you do, how you act, and all of that. So it puts a lot of responsibility on people. And I do think, just to reinforce, it's important to think beyond the kind of traditional business setting where you have employees. Think about your vendors. Think about your gig workers. Think about your people that you collaborate with. Think about your customers. None of those folks are off limits when it comes to adopting them into your economic family.
That's really good. One thing our pastor said this last week on Sunday, he was talking about your own weaknesses, areas that you struggle, and that often the Lord has you helping people get out of situations that you yourself struggle with, because that helps you bring compassion and empathy to the conversation. Rarely does he put you in a situation to guide someone out of a situation that you have no compassion for and no understanding of how hard that might be or why someone would fall for that sort of tactic. But I think that maybe applies here as well. You are maybe, without knowing it, going to be drawn to specific people that have the same like character flaws you have, that have the same tendencies that you have, which can, just like when you have biological children and they're just miniature versions of yourself and you're just every day reminded of how messed up you are. Like you see yourself staring back at you and you go, oh gosh. It is a very similar conversation, I think, with non-biological sons and daughters. You're watching people do something that you either have done or could easily do. And it can be hard because you're faced with your own sin. You're faced with your own character flaws. You're faced with the issues you have to deal with within yourself. But also, what a precious, incredible gift to enter in vulnerably into that relationship and intentionally grow with someone. But that's hard. That's also hard.
Yeah, it is hard. It takes a lot of wisdom. But it also pushes you to grow up yourself and not give yourself excuses, you know, for how you,
very true,
the way you are, the way you are. And because you're trying to set a different kind of example, because, and regardless of the relationship you have, but if you have someone that you're working with, like you are impacting their relationships, you are impacting their family, you're impacting their community, you're impacting all the people that they're going to touch. So there's a lot of responsibility here, but there's also a lot of joy because you get to invest in people and you get to see them succeed and grow and step into things that they have never done before, maybe, or things they're doing even better. And you're adding value to their life, I think, in such a great way.
Yeah. Probably all of us can think of at least one person in the beginning of our career that sort of set things up. Like, you can think of all the time they spent with you explaining things and helpfully critiquing your work and doing all that stuff, and those people really matter. If you think back to maybe those one or two people and what they did to help you get to where you are now, that's part, I think, partly what we're talking about is like those people that will take the extra time and effort and intentionality and how meaningful that can be, even if it feels small to you now.
Yeah. As I look back, I had several people, I'd say three or four people like this that were super formative in my own life. And they were all, many of them were, they were bosses, some of them. But I will say that some of them were pretty tough on me. And I look back on, it wasn't pleasant in the moment, but that toughness actually created something that I needed. And I remember one of them saying to me, yeah, I just feel like I'm supposed to be really tough on you so you survive the next phase of your life. And it paid off. And so I think that we have to realize that we have to give these sons and daughters what they need from us. And sometimes that's structure. Sometimes that's not a soft answer. Sometimes it's a firm answer. But it has to come out of integrity and not out of our own grumpiness or laziness or any of that. But I do think that's part of the deal. And there are boundaries that we have to set around things, especially in an economic household. And those boundaries are important. That's how people, there are boundaries in what works and what's allowed in our lives. It is a holistic thing. And I do think, as we wrap this up today, I would just ask, as you think about your role, maybe you are hungry for these relationships. Maybe you need them in your life. And so I think that's something you should be praying about and looking for. God, give me people that are trustworthy that can help me to grow up, whether it's in my industry or my life or my family. And find those people. I had some people when I was a young Christian. I had some people that were really parents to me in my church. They were older, two older couples, and I loved hanging around with them. And I got a lot out of that, just being around them. So that's available. It's out there. I think the other thing is also true. You might be in a situation where you haven't really thought about your team or the people you're working with as potentially as sons and daughters. And so there's a lot of thinking that you need to do. But beyond all of that, regardless of which place you're in, this all starts with you being understanding that you have been adopted by a trustworthy Heavenly Father who is involved intimately in your life, who is guiding you, who cares about you, who understands you, who will challenge you, who will correct you, who will lead you, right? So that's the starting place, is to be close to your Heavenly Father. That's where this all gets shaped. And so if that's what's being shaped in your life, that's what will come out into your work environment.
That's really good. We're excited to get to this circle number one next week. Is that right?
Circle number one is our partners. That sounds like the PC word for marriage, right? But it really is the partners kind of relationships that come, that are similar to and related to and come out of the marriage relationship. So that's number one. That's the first circle in terms of our relationships in the New Testament, the hidden codes in the New Testament for business.
Awesome. Thanks for this, Dave. You have a brilliant
night. Thank you, Amy.
See you guys next week.